12 minutes past eight. We now have our second guest. We can kick off our panel. Jack Bloom, DA, Shadow MEC for Health in Gauteng, and Dr. Sadiq Karim, our Chief of Operations here in the Western Cape Department of Health. Sadiq, welcome back. Member of the family at this point. Thank you so much for your time again. And Jack Bloom, welcome to the show. Well, let's kick off with you, Jack. You're at the epicenter at this time of the third wave. How has the response been in the health department in Gauteng at this time?
Well, I think conditions are very, very stressed. Private hospitals are overwhelmed, and government hospitals are also very crowded. It's all exacerbated by the fact that the Sharpton Peck Johannesburg Hospital is actually closed during this time. There's 1,000 beds at that hospital, including 120 ICU beds. It really should be used for COVID-19 cases, as it was used previously, and for, of course, there's other health, pressing health needs, including cancer patients and heart patients. But the reality is that I don't think our public health system can cope with the continued closure of the major hospital like Charlotte Mthethekwe. The real problem, I think, is that the provincial government built extra beds, but they built them in the wrong places. Many of them weren't actually completed, and many of them don't have staff to make them usable. For instance, at the Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital, 500 extra new beds were built. I think that was very good. It was done in good time, but only 100 of the 500 beds are actually used because they don't have staff. Now they're bringing in army medics to help out, but really it's just very poor planning, and unfortunately there's a wave of cases, and I really fear for people's lives.
I mean, your position in the opposition for health would have allowed you to see this coming for several months. What was said at the time when these 500 beds were put forward and they were not manned, and Cuban doctors were spread around the country, but there's so many unemployed health workers in the country that are South African. What was put to the Gauteng government?
Well, you know, the Gauteng government, I think, has always been too complacent about the scale of the threat that we placed. And I think they were shutting their eyes to reality. You know, 500 million rand was spent refurbishing a hospital that was donated by AngloGold Ashanti in the far west rand of Gauteng. They refurbished this hospital, and there's wonderful 175 ICU beds, but not a single one of those ICU beds are going to be used to treat a COVID-19 patient because there's no staff. And secondly, this hospital's in the wrong part of the province. It's far away from major population centres. Similarly, in the Vaal part of Gauteng, 300 extra beds were meant to be built at the Koppenang Hospital in Vereeniging. Well, they still haven't been built. There's contractor disputes, and for various reasons, they're not finished. So the Gauteng provincial government, they did have a field hospital at Nasrec that cost 250 million rand, and the Auditor General has criticized various aspects of the contract. That hospital was never well used, and the provincial government, I think, did take the sensible decision that it's far better to spend money on extra beds at existing hospitals. The problem is they didn't complete those extra beds, or they didn't staff them, or they're in the wrong place. And that's why we're in the eye of the storm now, and the provincial government, I don't think, is prepared for it. It's a terrible, terrible situation. The closure of the Sharpton Peck Johannesburg Hospital has meant that 800 patients that were there are dispersed to 15 other provincial hospitals, and they're overcrowded. So you have a situation at the Helen Joseph Hospital, for instance, where COVID-19 patients are sitting on chairs getting oxygen for 2 or 3 days before they're admitted to a ward.
Okay.
So I really worry about the ability to give people the care and treatment they deserve to survive.
Dr. Karim, I mean, we're hearing, and I think Jack is right, that it doesn't look like it's going to be very, it looks like it's going to continue to be dire in Gauteng. Can we talk about the lessons we can learn from this for the Western Cape? Our case is not nearly as severe, but from a perspective of beds and prepping ourselves not to be sort of hands in the air, if and when this wave hits, where do we stand?
I think Jack is quite right, and I think what we've obviously realized long ago, and I mean we're talking 15-18 months ago, was that it's a comprehensive ecosystem that's required. You cannot plan beds in the right places in the first instance. Jack's quite absolutely right on about that, and then not have the staff to staff the beds, or not have the oxygen that supplies the beds, or not have the medication. So it's an entire ecosystem. Even when we opened the convention center as the first hospital of hope, you'll recall,
yes,
we at the time made it very clear that it's an ecosystem. It was run like a proper field hospital, piped oxygen right throughout the facility. So one cannot, for example, open a field hospital and not supply oxygen. So it's an entire ecosystem that has to work together in order to make it functional. So we ran a fully-fledged field hospital with access to chronic medication, access to even therapists, physiotherapists, etc., who will well be required. And so I think that's quite critical. And then also what's also important, I think, just to mention, is the pre-hospital environment. So, for example, your emergency services, your primary healthcare environment, because if those are strengthened and focused on and not forgotten about, because we all think hospitals, which is really key, but if those issues are strengthened, it allows you to then obviously make sure you use your critical resources for when it's needed in hospital. I mean, those are absolutely all quite correct.
But we closed down our Hospital of Hope. Do we need to set it up again?
We closed it down because at the time we had kept the Brackengate Hospital, if you recall.
Okay.
That's 336-bed facility. We
right.
currently have, as of this morning, 60 patients admitted, but we have the ability to, in fact, we've already begun scaling it up to its full potential of 336 beds. We have another 200 beds that are ready for use, fitted out with oxygen. Mm-hmm. We've got the staff for it at Mitchells Plain Hospital, and we've also got 60 beds in the rural areas that we also have had kept open. So we closed the convention center, but we kept about just over 600 beds, field hospital beds in the province active.
Okay, and out of interest, there's a wing of Tygerberg Hospital that people keep asking about that doesn't seem to be in use.
Yes, we had set it up as beyond the 600. If we needed that wing to be opened, then we could open it and staff it, and it's fully equipped as well. So that's another 120 beds. Should the need arise,
okay,
we have a further potential 120 beds there.
We will continue this after the break, Dr. Karim and Jack. I'd like to turn our attention to vaccinations, which unfortunately, as much as they are ramping up, seem to be going woefully slowly for our expectations. Let's go to the traffic, and we'll continue this panel speaking to Dr. Sadiq Karim, Chief of Operations at Western Cape Health, and Jack Bloom, DA, Shadow MEC for Health in Gauteng. Do you think that was a bad decision, the AstraZeneca?
Yes, absolutely. I think that scientifically, it was apparently a million vaccines were here and another 500,000 delivered. And we could have had 750,000 South Africans fully vaccinated and ready for the third wave.
Yeah, but
it was a bad decision then. It's an even worse decision now with what we know scientifically. There's also, it's inexplicable why some vaccines are not being considered, such as the Novavax vaccine. But again, we don't know why. It's just, you know, we've just got to accept government's words for these things. And I do worry that there's a lack of expertise at the level of the Ministerial Advisory Committee or beyond that.
That was the voice of Professor Francois Venter, Wits professor as well as former member of the Ministerial Advisory Committee on COVID-19, lamenting where we are with the vaccinations. And I think it's an important point that he makes. I mean, we can't cry over spilled milk, but we have no choice, because every time we ask government to hurry up with the vaccines, we get told it's a supply constraint issue. And he demonstrates there that there was a supply that we had that we pushed away, and there are other options. For example, many of our African neighbors are using CoronaVac, which is still in process for, I think, advanced stage for SAHPRA approval. And then you've got the likes of Sinopharm and Moderna that are being used around the world and seem to be at least touted from an emergency use perspective by the World Health Organization. And yet the only two vaccinations that have been signed off by SAHPRA are Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson. Dr. Karim, you're closer to those decision-making structures. Can you help us understand?
The
perhaps a bit closer than some, but I mean, I'm not in those structures.
So understood.
It's a bit difficult, understood. But obviously, from our perspective, we can only use the vaccines once they've been SAHPRA approved. I mean, I know from past exposure to some of these discussions that it's a lengthy process to get the SAHPRA approvals. And sometimes it frustrates us as implementers of the process. But we understand that that's all for good reason. One, you recall the, you know, when for example, the very first AstraZeneca vaccine, and some of the issues that were picked up with the AstraZeneca vaccine, and when that was recalled and taken off the shelves, and then there was the Baltimore incident with the J&J vaccine. So I mean, they're in place for a good reason, but it does take very long, and it does obviously have a massive impact on the supply, as was mentioned now in terms of the vaccine supply line. Because at the moment, we in the Western Cape at least, we actually have the capacity, but rightfully we don't have sufficient supply of the vaccines. Now, we are told that that's going to improve over the weeks to come, but let's hope that that actually does materialize.
Jack, as a position representative with respect to health, do these feel like clear enough reasons for us not to have rolled out a range of other types of vaccine?
Well, I think the mistake was made last year when other countries were contacting manufacturers directly. We should have been doing the same. We are told that Moderna, for instance, had made contact, and we should have been aggressively buying up suppliers, because the cost is actually minimal in concern. Whatever you pay for a vaccine, if you look at the return you get in terms of economic growth and saving lives, but that simply wasn't done, and now we're playing catch up, which is what's so distressing. And then, of course, the J&J sample had to be discarded because of quality concerns, and we put all our eggs in one basket when we should have looked at a whole range of other vaccines and possibilities, and we didn't. So we're constrained by supply, and the tragedy in Gauteng is that very few of our population are actually vaccinated now in the midst of this terrible third wave, and it could have been largely prevented in some degree if we had mass vaccination earlier. So it's crying over spilt milk at the moment. But I think what we need to do now is, with the vaccines that we have, is that we need to roll them out as soon as possible and get that done. But I'm afraid it's not helping much with this present wave of infections.
And they might even introduce, I don't know, maybe super spreader site. I don't know. I mean, who knows the risks of going out to get a vaccine in a third wave. But then on that, let's talk about the rollout, because that's something that is within our control. How is Gauteng looking in terms of your expectations of where we should be? I know you're saying it's less than where we should be. But in terms of trying to now ramp up daily jabs, where are we in Gauteng?
Well, I think the Gauteng Premier, David McCurry, has taken a sensible decision that at all public vaccination sites, they will accept walk-ins. And I think that's correct, because the electronic vaccination site seems to have quite a few problems, I must say, and many people haven't registered it, and the elderly people in particular don't have smartphones or don't know how to get onto the system. So I think that's a sensible decision. What I am concerned about is that some vaccination sites seem to have long queues and others are quite empty. I think there needs to be better coordination and information about where people go. And, possibly at this stage, I think they need to do registrations of people over 50 and people over 40 as well. I think we need to ready ourselves to expand the vaccinations to as large a population as possible, while, of course, always giving preference to people most at risk. I do think that there are signs that we should expand the population that is eligible for vaccinations and expand the number of sites as well. I still don't know why we're not working on weekends and round the clock. It's that important.
Well, Dr. Karim, we hear that the provinces can't afford to do it over the weekends. Is that right?
Yes, that's partially right. Yes, it is right, in fact, because we, over the weekends, and I suppose the difficulty is that this is the same staff who have also have to manage our comprehensive services, and particularly over the weekend when we often need massive trauma loads And our hospitals are generally just quite jam-packed as a result of that. And this is the same staff that's been going at us for 15 months. You know, so we, at this stage in the province, have not made the decision to open weekends. We are obviously doing that Monday to Friday. But week on week, we have managed to exceed our targets. At the moment, on average, for the week, for this week, we can do about 70,000 vaccinations for the week. We have the capacity to do about 120,000, but obviously, as we've discussed, that's supply constrained. On the issue of registration that Jack mentioned, absolutely right. We've registered thus far 53% of the eligible population 60 years and older. And we obviously need to continue ramping up those registrations. And we've been driving that very hard in getting people registered onto the system. We do take walk-ins at our sites, but obviously that's dependent upon whether there's still sufficient doses left after the registered and scheduled patients have been vaccinated.
We hear 40 plus is possibly on the pipeline. As Jack says, we should start opening up the registry, eligible registration, those eligible for registration, and that decision will be made imminently. Do you think that's going to be the case?
Yeah, well, we've been told, yes. I mean, we are having the discussions with the National Department at the moment about opening up the next age category. We've always said, though, however, having said that, that we'd like to get to at least 70% of the current age category before we open up registration for the next category. So a lot of it all just comes back down again to the supply line and how fast we can actually ramp up the daily vaccinations, I guess.
But, Doctor, I mean, registration is registration. Half of, as Jack described, I mean, half of our problem at the moment is a comedy of errors, and then the other half is just a lack of preparation.
You know, absolutely. And I think part of the preparation is the amount of sites that are active and coming online. I mean, Jack's quite right about that as well, because we are in the Western Cape, we've currently got 213 active sites, and not all run every day because of the issue of supply, but we plan to get to at least 274 sites. So we need to actively, in fact, push very hard that we increase the daily number of people that can be vaccinated.
Okay. The teachers' rollout, I apologize, I'm running over here, Regan. The teachers' rollout is supposed to kick off today. It seems as though the Western Cape is only going to kick off on Friday. I'm not quite sure why the discrepancy, but it will also give us a good sense of the logistical rollout, you know, moving over and above the EVDS system and pushing hard in particular sectors. Are you keeping a close eye on that, Dr. Karim?
We are, in fact, we are kicking off this afternoon at 2 p.m.
Thank you.
We've managed to pull it forward because we've managed to open up a large mass vaccination site for the educators. So we're actually extremely excited to be vaccinating our colleagues. We've got 26,400 doses in the first tranche, and so we'll be using that for the first group of educators. So we are quite excited we're going live this afternoon.
Fantastic. Good luck for that. Jack, any final thoughts from your perspective with the teacher rollout?
Well, I think it's wonderful that they've got it going. It's going to be launched in Gauteng today as well, and I hope it goes smoothly. And I'd like to see more of these mass vaccinations for people who are essential workers. We need to appreciate what they do.
Indeed. Jack Bloom, DA, Shadow MEC for Health in Gauteng there, and Dr. Sadiq Karim, Chief of Operations in the Western Cape Department of Health. Thank you both for your time.